trip?
We are not anti-Semites, but we are anti-crime. We are anti-killing. And in one word, we are anti-Zionist. And we live in peace with each other in Iran, with Jews, but we don't have any problem with Jews. We have problem with genocide, with killing, with Zionists.
We send a message to all young and free people around the world that humanity is in danger today. Hear our voice, our belief, and our goal. Down with Israel.
This year, the International Quds Day comes amid the ongoing Israeli onslaught on Gaza. Israel has cut off fuel, electricity, food, and water to Palestinians living in the besieged territory.
Iranians once again resonated voices of solidarity with Palestinians on International Quds Day and also strongly condemned the recent criminal acts of the Israeli regime leading to the martyrdom of two senior Iranian military personnel. When it comes to violation of human rights, nobody can stay silent. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
Thousands flooded the streets across Pakistan to denounce the United States and Israel for their war crimes in Gaza.
The US is a terrorist state. Israel is a terrorist regime. They are spreading terrorism against innocent men, women, and children in Gaza through their relentless attacks. The US and Israel are using their military might to systematically oppress and kill innocent Palestinians in Gaza.
Protesters marking Quds Day voiced their unwavering solidarity with the Palestinian people in their struggle against the Israeli occupation.
Israel is a fascist and illegitimate regime that is committing war crimes in Gaza by killing innocent men, women, and children on a daily basis. The end of Israel is necessary to maintain peace in the world.
Amid chants condemning Israel and the United States, speakers criticized what they called the criminal silence of the world on Israel's war crimes in Gaza.
We demand from the governments, from the Muslim governments, especially the government of Pakistan, to take practical actions. Just lip service is not enough. Just passing resolutions is not enough. Governments should take practical steps for the security of the people of Gaza.
Quds Day is an annual event observed on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan across the world to express solidarity with the Palestinians.
International Quds Day rallies in Pakistan are a manifestation of a solidarity with the Palestinians. The rallies are also a show of unity among Muslims worldwide. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Under the title Flood of the Free, thousands of Syrians and Palestinians along with regional resistance forces rallied in the Yarmouk Palestinian refugee camp in Damascus to commemorate International Quds Day. A joint military parade was organized by the Palestinian resistance as a message of strength and determination.
The commemoration of International Quds Day this year comes after Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, which constituted a strategic shift in the war against the Zionist enemy. It also comes amid the legendary resilience in the Gaza Strip, under the devastating onslaught and the cohesion among all resistance movements participating in this operation.
The Yarmouk camp has witnessed violent battles against terrorism. And today, from the same liberated camp, Syria, Iran, Hezbollah, and Palestine vow to keep fighting until the liberation of all occupied territories from the grip of the Israeli terrorist regime and its sponsors. After the military parade, speeches were delivered by representatives of resistance movements.
Today we commemorate International Quds Day, which coincides with the ongoing Israel attacks for the past 6 months on our Palestinian people in Gaza, resulting in a significant number of martyrs and wounded, mostly women and children. The resistance continues and will prevail, and we confirm our absolute support for the resistance both logistically and politically.
Representatives of the resistance praised the profound strategic vision of the founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini. who declared the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan as Quds Day. They say this vision was the cornerstone of the resistance front alliance with Palestine as its compass.
This is not from today. Since 1979, Imam Khomeini set this day for us to gather every year to the support of Palestine, liberation of Palestine from river to the sea, and also for the support for all the oppressed people all over the world.
Quds Day has proven to be more than just a celebratory occasion. It is a day that unifies people and brings them together around the Palestinian cause.
The crowds that gathered in solidarity with Gaza to commemorate this day have proven the wisdom of the Islamic Revolution in Iran by establishing an international day for Al-Quds as a constant reminder for the Palestinian cause. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Thousands of protesters have flocked to central London on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan to honour the call of International Quds Day. The annual event was established by Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, in 1979 to express solidarity with the Palestinians and inculcate a Muslim-led opposition to Zionism. With the ongoing genocide in Gaza unfolding before the world's eyes, this year's protest has taken on extra significance and emotion. It's because people are standing up to a Zionist supremacist entity which has thus far murdered over 33,000 people while still not being able to destroy the capabilities of the resistance. Due to its popularity, many attempts have been made by pro-Israel groups to ban the Al-Quds rally. And this year, these lobbying efforts fall within the wider context of Zionists and their agents at the top of government trying to get all Palestine marches banned since last October. Efforts that have thus far been resisted by police and other elements within the establishment. Those on the march steadfastly reject any attempts to ban it.
It's very contradictory in a country that promotes freedom of speech around the world, human rights and democracy around the world. They want to stop people from protesting, not only these issues, but many other issues. And it's our duty as citizens of this country and the West to continue supporting through democratic means and protest the cause of Palestine.
When you look at the counter-demonstrators, they're a hopscotch of people, Zionists, far-right, British nationalists and so on and so forth, extreme-right, nasty elements of British society. They're all on that side. So if you want to ban anyone, ban that lot. We're very representative of British society, especially London society. We're white, black, green, brown, every religion, every colour you can imagine, we're all here.
I'm here to show solidarity with the people in Gaza especially who are suffering genocide, and also show solidarity with our brothers and sisters of all faiths and none who are calling upon our government to uphold international law.
The people of Gaza have won the admiration of the world with their steadfastness against this unprecedented genocide, but as they stand on the brink of a deliberate famine engineered by the Zionist entity, it has scarcely been as important for the voice of the world at rallies like Al-Quds Day to shout loudly for justice and liberation for Palestine. Issa Kadhimi, London.
Down with America, down with Israel. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. These were some of the slogans that reverberated across Indian-administered Kashmir to commemorate the International Quds Day. Thousands of people, including women and children, poured onto the streets across the region after Friday prayer in a show of solidarity with Palestinians. Holding banners and placards, the protesters condemned Israel's war crimes committed against Palestinians in Gaza Strip.
6 months of war has seen unprecedented destruction in Gaza, where houses have been knocked down and hospitals bombed. Thousands of children have been killed, relief workers attacked. The onslaught on Palestinians has shaken the conscience of humanity. This wanton killing and destruction must stop.
People cutting across religious divide have come out today to condemn Israel's genocide in Gaza. Innocent children are being killed every day. It's high time Muslim world and those who believe in humanity unite against Israel's atrocities.
The protesters denounced what they call the criminal silence of the international community over the mass killings of Palestinians. They also condemned Israeli deadly airstrikes on Iranian embassy's consular building in Syria. Since Israeli regime began its onslaught on October 7, more than 33,000 people have been killed.
I want to call on international community to play their critical role in getting Palestinians their inalienable right to life. Also, I call on the religious class of the world, including Pope Francis, that humanitarian ceasefire should be implemented in the occupied territory of Gaza, and Palestinians should be given unrestricted access to the life-saving aid. And I call on Palestinian people that not only the day of Quds, we are with you every day, and call on that we will stand with you by thick and by thin.
The protesters also urged the Indian government to intervene and help restore peace in Gaza. Ever since the founder of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, declared the last Friday of Ramadan as International Quds Day, every year millions of people across the world take to the streets on this day to remind people of the Palestinian cause.
As part of International Quds Day, people here in Kashmir have held rallies to express solidarity with the people of Palestine amid the genocidal onslaught in Gaza. The protesters called on the international community to break its silence and unite against Israel. Sidli Safir, Indian administered Kashmir.
Tempers are running high in Pakistan over Israel's onslaught in Gaza. In a dramatic incident, a KFC restaurant in Pakistan-administered Kashmir was set ablaze during an anti-US-Israel protest. Following the incident, police detained over 50 individuals who were accused of attacking the restaurant in the Mirpur district.
We do not support the burning of KFC, but we want to boycott it as it is in support of genocide. We stand with boycott and we do boycott. We do not want them, we just want them not to fund Israel and help them in their genocide.
The arson comes as US-Israeli genocide in Gaza shows no signs of abating. The regime's attacks on all areas of the besieged territory, including hospitals, schools and aid convoys, continue.
We are already seeing the impact on the economy, on the financial decline of McDonald's and boycott. It's huge. Even in some countries, in Arab countries, those outlets are being closed because nobody is buying it.
Free! Free!
The ongoing genocide in Gaza has fueled anger and frustration among people worldwide, prompting calls for boycotts against entities believed to support Israel financially or politically.
Boycott is something that we are, this is what we feel from our heart, from inside, that we don't want to support their economy. We don't want to support the companies that are supporting the Israeli soldiers. So, for that, we need to boycott. I know this is not a permanent solution, but we have to boycott.
Authorities are now faced with the challenge of managing the fallout from the incident and preventing further escalation of tensions.
As tempers run high in Pakistan due to the call for boycotting pro-US and pro-Israeli brands, the targeted destruction of a KFC restaurant represents a symbolic reaction of the people, both locally and globally, against US-Israeli genocide in Gaza. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
This is IOIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio, with you every single moment.
the supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it. And leave no grief unless Thou takes it away. And leave no enemy. And leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of In the Name of Allah, the best of the names. In the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is His anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is His good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from Thee, O Patron of Beneficence.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. There is no stop to the genocide in Gaza as the Israeli regime kills more Palestinians. This as the Holocaust reaches 6 months. Over 33,000 people have been killed as the so-called international community continues to look on. What has stopped in these 6 months is hope that international law would bring a halt to this genocide. The Israeli regime continues to ignore demands for a ceasefire because there has been no real ramifications exerted against them by the Western hegemonic front. What does it all mean? Well, stay with us as we take a look at this and more on The Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Out of Detroit, Saeed Khan, Director of Global Studies, Wayne State University. And out in Edinburgh, co-founder of Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign, Mick Napier.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, thank you both for being with us. I'd like to start this off in Detroit with Saeed. Did you ever imagine back in October when this particular genocide started that we would still be witnessing this tragedy 6 months later?
There was always the hope and really the expectation that the international community, particularly those of Western powers and those who claim to have Israel as an ally, would have been able to exert more pressure in light of the carnage, in light of the completely disproportionate toll on civilian life, the devastation and the destruction of Gaza, its infrastructure, and really any viable form of having a quality of life. But what we saw, though, unfortunately, was a rather cynical ploy by Western powers, whether it was for their own domestic political agenda or as an extension of, let's face it, their own imperialistic appetites, that there were few to no constraints that they exerted on Israel other than the rhetorical, and even the rhetorical was very mild. I think it is important to also note, though, that the latest reports are that the Israeli forces are withdrawing from southern Gaza. Whether that is significant due to it being the six-month anniversary or because of the more recent international pressure that Israel has been facing, particularly in light of the targeted killing of seven World Central Kitchen food relief aid workers, has yet to be seen. But we do need to go ahead and then provide all of these contexts to realize that any kind of cessation right now is far too little and far too late.
Well, Mick, the numbers speak for themselves. There have been over 33,000 Palestinians killed by the Israeli regime in these 6 months. And you know, estimates are saying that probably at least 10,000 are still under the rubble. Over 200 aid workers, at least 140 journalists, along with over 685 medical staff have also been killed by the regime during this time. I mean, your thoughts about this. It is absolutely amazing that we are still watching this. I mean, can this be called anything but genocide and crimes against humanity?
Israel has long been accused of crimes against humanity by various United Nations investigations, Goldstone Report, and ever since then. The word genocide is relatively new in official UN parlance, but this slow motion genocide in Gaza for decades and decades has always been punctuated by periodic massacres, 2008-9, 2014, 2021, which the Israelis call mowing the lawn or cutting the grass on the basis that there is no possibility of negotiating with the Palestinians. How can you negotiate with people when they know the Israeli intention is to remove all of them from Palestine? So therefore, no alternative but to carry on with periodic killings. I mean, there's a brutal logic to all of this, because once the West grew the state of Israel, Britain and France and then the USA, once they grew the state of Israel, provided it with everything it needed in order to grow, nuclear weapons, weapons of mass destruction, massive economic aid, and so on, all predicated on the basis of Zionism, that they would remove as many Palestinians as possible at various different speeds, but all of them were really doomed. Now, that when that came to a situation where the Palestinians continued to resist, refused to give in, refused to kiss the boot on their necks, then really, in a horrible sense, Israel had no alternative but to slaughter tens of thousands of them. Because you have to remember, when Western powers have approached black people in Australia, native people in North America, they have always had a huge demographic advantage. So that even when they were defeated militarily, they, as one Native American leader said, they're like leaves on the trees. There were so many. Absolute numbers of Europeans coming to these countries guaranteed their ultimate domination. But Israel is really 7 million Jews in Israel, 6 million Zionist Jews probably, and they're surrounded by 270, 280 million Arabs who switch on their television sets and see people being killed because they are Arabs, because they speak Arabic. So the ultimate outcome of this struggle is not in doubt, but in the meantime, Israel needs to maintain what it calls its deterrent edge, its ability to terrorize people in Lebanon, Jordan, Syria, Iraq, Egypt, and so on, by mass killing. Now, this has not been working. The Lebanese resistance is unbroken, and the Palestinian resistance is suffering huge attacks, but it's not being defeated. And Netanyahu said he was going in to exterminate Hamas, which is, of course, an impossibility, since they're a projection of the Palestinian people themselves. So where we are at the moment is massive genocidal violence, but it's baked into the whole Zionist project. And Israel bombing neighboring countries, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, and so on, is also baked into the whole Zionist project. So its ultimate defeat seems to be very, very, very likely, very probable. But until that happens, Israel means war. Israel means violence and attacks on its neighbours. And I mean, from the comfort of my home here in Scotland, I still have to say, Zionism will only be defeated only after it plunges the whole area into war.
Well, what about that, Saeed, what Mick has just said, that the Zionist project, it's obvious that it's over, but in the meantime, it will continue to inflict murder and genocide in the region. And first of all, I want to know if you agree with him. And second of all, if you do, why do we still see this Western hegemonic front support for this regime in the way that we're witnessing?
Well, first of all, I mean, I think you do see that there have been acts of provocation that suggest at least some kind of interest in broadening this to a regional conflict. The Israeli bombing of the Iranian consulate in Damascus is clearly meant not only as an act of provocation to try to draw Iran more closely into the conflict, but also to hopefully draw others into the conflict against Iran. The very idea that Prime Minister Netanyahu has for most of his recent political life been trying to get the West to go to war with Iran, the whole idea of making claims that Iran is moving toward a nuclear missile capability, providing false evidence even at the United Nations in 2006. This was even discredited by the U.S. Defense Intelligence Estimate. This is really in some ways about this one individual who doesn't mind burning everything down in order to save his own political career. But at the same time, I think it's important to also recognize that the West, as you had asked, is doubling down on Israel for whatever reasons. It is mortgaging many of its own stated values in order to prop up this this current campaign, which may suggest that the West is itself waning in its power, influence, its geopolitical credibility, and seemingly unconcerned about that, whether this is because of that ambivalence or whether it is an act of final desperation with other world powers coming to the fore. It doesn't seem to bode well either for Israel or the West if this is going to persist when it comes to this full-throated support for what could best be described by many as a rogue and even a pariah state.
Right. Well, what about that, Mick? What we have seen the last 6 months, and your perspective of what it has done globally to the perspective of individuals about international law, international organizations such as the United States, United Nations, which was allegedly set up to prevent this type of genocide or what is happening that we're watching as we speak.
I think we have to look reality in the face, and certainly since 1945, that the international laws that were put in place after 1945, after the Nazi exterminations of Jews and Serbs and Gypsies and others, was never meant to be applied to benefit people in Asia or Africa or outside Europe. What they were concerned about was and indeed, you know, it's very clear from the Algerian War of Independence, 1.5 million killed. There was no question of these laws at Nuremberg and the Geneva Conventions being applied there. America killed 3 million Indochinese after its invasion of Vietnam began to go wrong. No question of they having any protection from the laws that were passed after 1945. No, these laws have never been applied. The so-called Western values were always a complete myth. If you look beyond them, genocide there was a program on BBC last week, which was quite remarkable. It dealt with the death of 3 million people in Bengal, deliberately allowed by the British to happen in 1943, organized by Churchill. Now, we can discuss that because of the distance of time the BBC can run that. But currently, a lot of people still think that the genocide in Gaza is something out of the norm in European history. But it's nothing of the sort. Now, given the balance of forces at the moment, I have one question. Why doesn't America carpet bomb Yemen? The Yemenis are coming to the aid of the people of Gaza facing genocide. They're attacking Israeli ships in the Red Sea. When the British and the Americans respond and bomb Yemen, they respond by attacking British and American ships as well. In Southeast Asia, and also elsewhere, America used B-52 carpet bombing to destroy huge areas of these countries. Why not? I think it's to do with that America's power is declining. It relies on Arab allies more than in the past, because Israel has committed the ultimate crime. Israel was backed by America after 1967 massively. Before 1967, American aid to Israel was fairly modest. But after Israel showed that it could destroy Syrian, Egyptian, and Jordanian armies, that's when American aid began to go through the roof, and very, very quickly. But recently, this Israeli ability to get to prove to its paymasters in Washington that it can police the region, that it is a sturdy attack dog against people who defy America, that's beginning to fail. And I think the failure to crush the resistance in Lebanon, and now the failure to crush the resistance in Gaza in anything like a respectable time, means that Israel's committing the only sin which counts in Washington, which is failure. And the failure to establish its power to dominate the region, I think, will reverberate for years to come. And that's why Israel is slaughtering so many Palestinian civilians in Gaza, because its ability to strut the stage of the Middle East as invulnerable has mm-hmm. been badly dented. And this by a non-state actor, by another modestly equipped Arab militia. There, the Palestinian resistance has created a crisis inside Israel, huge demonstrations between different Zionist blocs, and it's created a crisis in world politics as well, in America, Britain and elsewhere. It's not just that perceptions have changed across the Middle East, which is boiling. It's that millions of people in Britain and in America now view their governments and even their states quite differently than before October the 7th.
Right, right. Interesting points, Mick. What about that, Saeed? I mean, if we look at these 6 months and the changes that have taken place, let's start from here. First of all, a lot of the individuals who have become aware not only of the reality now of the Israeli regime and what it has been doing prior to, of course, October 7, 75 years, but also that their countries that usually say that they support democracy and they stand for human rights and women's rights and kids' rights, but they have done nothing to stop this and they have continued to arm this entity, the significance of this growing awareness that is taking place?
Well, I think it's rather profound. What this has really exposed in the last 6 months is a lot of demythification. First, looking at Israel, there was a myth of its military being all-powerful, and also, as some were making the claim, all-moral. Well, this conflict really completely eviscerated that. First of all, the morality of the IDF, by its own images that it has been transmitting around the world, refute that. But the idea that they were essentially caught completely off guard on October the 7th by Hamas, as Mick said, a non-state actor, really exposed the Israeli military for being far less competent, far less capable than it has projected. The second thing is Israel's intelligence and security service, which again has not only been something that is hallowed around the world, but also supposed to be a source for consternation and fear. That proved to be spectacularly incompetent and a failure on October the 7th. And then lastly, I think we have to take a look at the media narrative, which has been for so long dominant and dominated by the Israeli position. That has now changed irrevocably, that now people are starting to see, and to be fair, even within Israeli media like Haaretz and some others, criticism that is unprecedented of not just the leadership of Israel, but some soul-searching about its own mission, its own objective, and its own tactics. So I'm not sure that Israel can really recover from those. On your other issue regarding Western powers, I think that now we can safely say that the sun is setting on so-called Western liberal democracy, or at least the myth of it, that it has been able to, for so long, assert itself, even bully non-Western countries, particularly those in Africa, South America, and in Asia, browbeating them, using it as justification for sanctions and other actions against them to say, we are democracies, this is the gold standard. The credibility of countries like the UK, the US, France, Germany, Australia, and many others is simply not there anymore. And so the idea then that other countries need to necessarily be fearful or act out of a sense of consternation toward Western countries, I think that myth has also been sufficiently shattered.
Well, quite interesting. Your thoughts on that, Mick, if that is the case, if all of this has been shattered. Tell me your perspective of where the United Nations now stand in all of this as far as global perspective, because it would appear that the United Nations has been totally impotent the last 6 months. Do you see now countries, especially those in the global south and others, trying to find an alternative to that UN system as it has badly failed humanity, especially the last 6 months?
Well, the UN has always, of course, had a built-in American, French, and even British veto. So therefore, it was always emasculated when it came to intervening against, for example, the American invasion of multiple countries, Central and South America, fomenting coups. The myth of liberal democracy, it was precisely that, a myth. We do have democratic rights in this country. We can stand in a street corner and shout. But when it comes to the core interests of the rulers of these countries, they're quite ruthless in America and in Britain in suppressing potential challenges to that politically. Jeremy Corbyn recently built the Labour Party to be a massive party, enjoyed great popularity, had huge rallies across the country, and he was crushed by an alliance of right wing, the Labour Party right wing, and the Zionist spearpoint. So that's always been a myth. But what's happened recently is it has burned into people's brains, into their psyche, what's happening in Gaza. Surgeons amputating their own children's limbs without anesthetics. Horror piled upon a deeper horror, beyond the imagination of a horror filmmaker, has burned very deeply into millions and millions of people's awareness of what's going on. And they don't just ask about the horror in Gaza. It's so horrible people can't even think about it too much. But they are beginning to say, if our governments are capable of supporting this, they're capable of anything. And the Israeli genocide is an acid eating away at support across the Arab world, of course, when Arabs are being massacred because they're Arabs, but also across Western states as well, that more and more people are moving to a position of opposing what their government does. But within that, more and more, a very, very large number of people, unprecedented in my experience over several decades, an unprecedented number of people are committing themselves to oppose, in however vague a way, however unclear a way, the existing status quo, which they think has led to aggressive war after aggressive war, and now pay-by-TV genocide. So yes, I think it's quite remarkable. I think we will look back on this from years to come to see this was a seminal moment. That's yes. Something very big. You know, it's a cliche, and we're taught it all the time in Britain. The world changed after 9/11. Well, it did, only because of aggression and increasing numbers of wars fomented by the Pentagon. But the world is changing at the level of popular belief, popular commitment, and understanding of what's going on because of what's happened, because of the Palestinian resistance and the genocidal response of Israel. They may be able to execute large numbers of people, shoot women and children at close range, make sure that every child in the neonatal unit dies, and create conditions where every single person in an intensive care unit dies. This is now understood by more people than even those who understood the barbarism of the invasion of Iraq. So yes, I think it's a very dramatic moment, and it's going to play out in British politics, and I think in politics internationally.
Indeed. Well, thank you both for being with me on this Spotlight. Syed Khan, Director of Global Studies, Wayne State University out of Detroit, Mick Napier, co-founder, Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign out of Edinburgh. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, thanking you for being with us, and thanking you on behalf of all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. In the limelight.
Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas has denounced Texas Governor Greg Abbott's efforts to fortify stretches of the southern border with Mexico with razor and concertina wire. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The American newspaper Punkchester Times has covered this story and tells us more. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas criticized Texas Governor Greg Abbott's initiative to reinforce sections of the southern border with Mexico with concertina and razor wire, labeling the approach ineffective. Alejandro Mayorkas, speaking at a roundtable at Homeland Security headquarters in Washington on Friday, 5th of April, highlighted that migrants were easily cutting through the barriers, impairing the ability of Customs and Border Protection, CBP, to carry out their duties. Texas Governor Greg Abbott's strategy under the umbrella of Operation Lone Star and involving the deployment of state National Guard troops includes the installation of concertina and razor wire alongside other barriers along Texas's border with Mexico. This has sparked a legal dispute between Texas and the U.S. Justice Department, particularly regarding the use of such wire. Contrary to Governor Abbott's claims attributing reduced illegal crossings to the barriers, Alejandro Mayorkas pointed out that certain border sections were fortified with razor wire last year, when migrant crossings were at record highs. He argued that crediting the decrease in encounters solely to Governor Abbott's measures is unfounded, emphasizing the complex nature of border security. Under Governor Greg Abbott's leadership, Texas has pursued an aggressive stance challenging federal authority over border and immigration policy. Alongside deploying barriers and National Guard troops, Texas has engaged in controversial actions like transporting migrants to Democratic-led cities without prior notification. Additionally, Texas has attempted to implement stringent immigration laws, exemplified by SB 4, which is currently subject to legal scrutiny. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas accused Texas of exacerbating disorder through its border efforts, emphasizing the importance of coordination between federal and state authorities in addressing immigration issues. He stressed that immigration policy falls within the exclusive purview of the federal government, reiterating the need for responsible governance in addressing border challenges. Despite facing impeachment proceedings in the House of Representatives related to his handling of immigration policy, Alejandro Mayorkas remains focused on his duties. As he prepares to testify before congressional committees, Mayorkas underscored his commitment to his work, expressing hope that the impeachment process would not detract from his responsibilities at Homeland Security Department. The national broadcaster CBS News has also covered this story. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas on Friday, 5th of April, denounced Texas Governor Greg Abbott's efforts to fortify stretches of the southern border with Mexico with razor and concertina wire as ineffective, saying migrants are easily cutting through the barriers. "We do not consider concertina wire to be effective. It impairs Customs and Border Protection's ability to do its job, and we're also seeing migrants rather easily cutting through concertina wire," Mayorkas told a group of reporters who attended a roundtable on Friday, 5th of April, at Homeland Security headquarters in Washington. As part of a broader, multi-billion-dollar campaign known as Operation Lone Star, Texas Governor Greg Abbott has instructed state National Guard troops to put up concertina and razor wire, as well as other barriers along parts of Texas's border with Mexico. The wire is currently at the center of an ongoing legal battle in federal courts of law between Texas and the U.S. Justice Department. Governor Greg Abbott argues that the barriers deter migrants from crossing into his state illegally and has credited them for a marked drop in illegal crossings along the Texas border since last year. More broadly, he has claimed that Texas actions, which also include arrests of migrants on trespassing charges, are responsible for pushing migrant crossings into neighboring Arizona and California in recent months. But Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas disputed Governor Abbott's claims on Friday, 5th of April, noting that some stretches of the Texas-Mexico border were fortified with razor wire late last year, when migrant crossings were soaring to record levels, including in the Texas border town of Eagle Pass. I know that Governor Greg Abbott has taken credit for a reduction in the number of encounters, and I would posit that the tools that he has employed, and I'm not commenting on their lawfulness or legal shortcomings, that is obviously the subject of litigation in court, but the tools that he has employed were in effect in December, and they were in effect in January, Mayorkas said. And so to attribute the significant drop in the number of encounters to anything he has done, I would say is belied by the facts. Representatives for Texas Governor Greg Abbott did not immediately respond for requests for comment. During Governor Greg Abbott's tenure, Texas has mounted the most aggressive state effort in modern history to challenge the federal government's long-standing power to set border and immigration policy. In addition to trespassing arrests and the deployment of barriers and National Guard troops, Texas has bused tens of thousands of migrants to Democratic-led cities without notifying local authorities. Last January, the Texas National Guard commandeered a public park in Eagle Pass, Texas, and has since blocked federal Border Patrol agents from processing migrants there. Texas has also sought to implement one of the toughest state immigration laws in U.S. history. The measure, known as SB 4, would empower Texas officials to arrest and jail migrants on misdemeanor or felony charges if they are suspected of crossing into the United States without authorization and to order them to return to Mexico. The law is currently paused while a federal appeals court determines its legality. Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas said he couldn't say much about SB 4 because of the ongoing court case, but he noted that it is federal government's position that immigration policy is the exclusive province of the federal government. Alejandro Mayorkas accused Texas of trying to create disorder through its border efforts. We think that responsible governance requires people in positions of authority to communicate, to coordinate and collaborate with one another, and the deliberate refusal to do so in an effort to sow chaos is not responsible governance. Alejandro Mayorkas, who came to the U.S. as a child refugee from Cuba, has found himself at the center of the nation's contentious debate over immigration policy. It's a debate that has intensified in recent years because of record levels of migrant apprehensions reported along the southern border with Mexico. Earlier this year, the Republican-led House of Representatives impeached Alejandro Mayorkas on charges that he breached the public's trust and failed to fully enforce U.S. immigration laws, making him the first cabinet secretary to be impeached since the 1870s. Alejandro Mayorkas has not been accused of personal misconduct, and Democrats have said Republicans impeached him solely because of immigration policy differences. The House impeachment managers are expected to deliver the articles of impeachment to the Democratic-led Senate next Wednesday, when Mayorkas is also set to testify before two congressional committees for funding hearings. On Friday, 5th of April, Mayorkas reiterated that he remains focused on his day job and said he hasn't thought about whether he'd prefer that the Senate hold a trial or quickly dismiss the impeachment articles against him.
voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
mayor of Gaza's Al-Maghazi refugee.